You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Eric Donovan. Eric is an Irish professional boxer, and as an amateur, he was a 5-time Irish national champion, and he won bronze medals at the 2029 and 2010 European Championships. Eric turned professional in June of 2016. In his opening bout, he defeated a Polish veteran, earning a 40-36 points victory on a Ricky Hatton promoted show at the National Stadium in Dublin. Sit back and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for the co-feature of the evening. 10 rounds in the featherweight division, making his way to the ring. Please welcome Eric Lillywhite Lightning Donovan. Introducing first, out of the blue corner, he weighed in at 126.3 pounds, or 9 stone 5 ounces. Wearing white trunks with black and gold trim, he brings a record of 14 wins, only one defeat. 8 of those victories coming by way of knockout from Attai, Ireland, Eric Lillywhite Lightning Donovan!
Eric, thanks a million for coming on today. How are you?
All good, Ian. Yeah, thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
Very good. And do you want to... What was your childhood like growing up? Were you mad into all sports, or what was it like?
Yeah, so I'm one of 6 children and grew up in Attai in County Kildare and played a number of sports growing up. Gaelic football, hurling, running, soccer. But boxing is the one that really grabbed me because I excelled at that from a very early age.
Did it kind of run in the family, boxing, or was it?
Yeah, well, my 2 older brothers done it. One of them was quite classy and pretty stylish, and the other one was a bit of a brawler. But my dad done a bit. He was in the army years ago. He done a bit of it, and I've cousins as well. I had one particular cousin who was very successful at it. He was multiple times a Leinster champion, and so I kind of went into it that way and became pretty good at it very quickly.
Well, when what age were you when you, I suppose, first went into a boxing gym?
I was 7 when I went in for the first time, and you start boxing competitively when you're 11. So when I turned 11, I had kind of 4 years under my belt, development years. And so when I was 11, I became All-Ireland champion. And yeah, in order to get to the All-Ireland, you have to go through a number of different processes. So you start with your county, and then you go to your province, and then you go on to the... To the nationals. So I won the Kildares, won the Leinsters, and won the nationals then, and I repeated that feat for a good few years, and was lucky enough to go on and win 10 Irish titles underage, well, from underage all the way up to junior, and then I won 5 at senior level. So very, very lucky, very, you know, grateful for the success that I had in boxing.
Was there any, I suppose, as a young fella, that young and going to the gym, was there any boxer at the time that you kind of looked up to or kind of inspired you?
Yeah, well, when I was younger, I looked up to Prince Nassim Ahmed. He was a bit of a hero of mine. And I remember being quite torn when he boxed Wayne McCullough. Prince Nassim boxed Wayne McCullough for the world title, and I was a little bit torn because Wayne McCullough is an Irish boxing legend, and Prince Naz he was my kind of boxing hero. He was a southpaw, he was flamboyant, he was slick, he was cocky, he was, a lot of people watched him because they wanted to see him get beat, but I kind of really enjoyed watching him because I just thought he was absolutely class and exceptional at what he'd done, and he kind of went against the grain as so to speak, in terms of, like, you know, being humble and being respectful and being kind of being nice. You know, he was the opposite. He used to say, I'm going to knock you out in this round and I'm going to make you do this, make you miss, make it, you know. I don't know. I just thought it was very he was very entertaining, and, you know, prize fighting is an entertaining sport. So he was the kind of first real boxer that I would have kind of looked up to or tried to replicate his kind of boxing style.
Would I be right in saying, did his son box there the weekend?
Sorry? His son boxed, yes, he did. His son made his debut on the undercard of the Usyk versus Daniel Dubois fight. And he was very successful in his debut. He knocked out his opponent, but his opponent wasn't really much use at all. He was a journeyman, so you can't really assess him too much on that, but he'd done exactly what he was supposed to do. What a card, what a platform to make your debut. I suppose when you're the son of a legend like that, you kind of get the breaks and get the opportunities. But, you know, he's going to be assessed and judged, even though you hope that he wouldn't, but he will be assessed and judged as the prince's son, and that will bring its own challenges, and that will be very difficult for him. But unusual in the sense that he didn't have any amateur fights at all, no amateur fights. He's just going straight into the professional game, and I think that will be, it'll be very difficult for him, but not impossible. So it'd be interesting to see how he develops and how he goes from here.
Will the experience of Lighter, that he didn't have any kind of amateur, will it stand to him or not? What did you make of the Usyk fight yourself, Eric?
I thought it was, it was controversial in the sense that the low blow, you know, was it legit or not? I thought it was a perfectly fine, legitimate punch, even though I would be a Usyk fan. You know, I think Usyk and Lomachenko are just two absolute superstars and just awesome fighters. And I love them. I love watching them. I love it. Like, these guys are game changers, really. But do I think if the referee counted to 10, would he have got up? I think he would have. I think he definitely would have got up. I think he would have won the fight. I'm glad in a way that Usyk was the winner in the fight, because I don't think Dubois deserved. I just don't think he's world championship level. Like, he put up good fights, and that's okay. Maybe he's European level. I just don't think he's good enough to win a world title.
What do you think yourself is next for Usyk? Will they get the Tyson Fury over the line?
I don't know. I'd love to. Like, I believe that Usyk wants to fight.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that Tyson Fury wants it. He says he does. You know, I think there's some big fights there for Tyson Fury. Like, the Usyk one and the AJ one, it would be a shame if he didn't have those fights, you know, because it's one thing, like, being a world champion, and listen, it's an incredible achievement to be a world champion, but to be involved in mega fights and to win them, you know, to be unified champion and to be undisputed champion, and, you know, those kind of fights, like, live long in the memory of people forever, forevermore. So hopefully we see some of those big fights happening in the near future.
Because there are so many fights over the years in boxing and MMA that haven't come through, and it's only now, looking back on them, you kind of say, what would have happened if it did go through? What age were you when you made your amateur debut?
Yeah, so start boxing at 11. You're 11 when you start boxing competitively for the first time. I suppose I was 14 when I boxed for Ireland for the first time. 13, 14, I think, in around that age. And then I was 15 when I went to represent Ireland in my first major championships, European Schoolboy Championships. It was called the European Cadets at that time, but now it's called the European, I think it's either Schoolboy, no, not Schoolboy, it's kind of European Youth Championships.
What year was that?
2001.
One.
Yeah. I was the captain of the Irish team then, and nine of us went over to England, to Liverpool, where the Europeans were held. And I won a bronze. I got to the semi-final. I was beaten by 1 point in the semi-final by a Turkish boxer. So unlucky. Yeah, came close. But it was good. It was a great experience. And I suppose my career just kind of kicked on from there.
You when you were, was it 2005 I was reading, did you fight over in China?
I did, yeah.
What was that like?
I was mental, like, you know, the whole like experience is incredible, because we had our training camp in the Philippines, in Manila, and we were like training like I think a couple thousand feet above sea level in a hotel up in the mountains. And that was our training camp, and it was lovely up there, and it was, we had 2 weeks up there training and climatizing and, you know, getting ourselves into great shape. And I think it was maybe about 2.5 weeks over there. We'd something like 16 or 17 days. And then we came back down and we flew into China then. It was in Mianyang City. And I got to the top 16. I was beaten by the eventual bronze medalist, Belarusian. Very good. Simeon is his name. Very good. Very good boxer, and he went on to have a very good, successful professional career as well. Romanian. But it was good. It was a good experience. I was only young though, you know. I was 2005. I was only 19, so it was my first ever major world championships, and a real experience. Incredible.
In 2010, you boxed what's the fella's name? Dominic
Valentino.
Yeah, you boxed him in June 2010.
Domenico Valentino. He was the reigning world champion then when I boxed him. He won the world championships in 2009. I boxed him in an international, Ireland versus Italy, and I beat him. It was a great win for me, beating the reigning world champion. And then I went to the European Senior Championships in Moscow and won a bronze medal. I won three fights to get to the semi-final, and unfortunately came up against a very good Russian in that semi-final who went on to win the gold. His name is Albert Salimov. He's the only amateur boxer ever to beat the Vasily Lomachenko.
Go away.
But that shows you how good he was, yeah. I lost to him in the final. I think it was 8-2 or something like that, but it was a good fight, but look, he was just a class operator, one of the best I've ever shared the ring with. But it was great, great achievement.
And when you turned professional, then after that, how did you I suppose find the step up from amateur to professional? Did it take you a while to kind of adjust, or how did you find it?
Yeah, it did. It took me a little while to adjust, all right, because I was 31 when I turned professional. And you know, they often say it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. But I was so set in my ways as an amateur boxer, a southpaw, up on my toes, really. I was a light puncher, a high volume puncher, but I wasn't a concussive, powerful type puncher. You know, I wouldn't really stun many people with my punch power. But I had to work on trying to develop that. And I never really did kind of transform into a knockout puncher, but I did gain some strength and I did develop a bit of power. But I was so late in making the switch over that, you know, it was just so set in my ways, my amateur ways. And but in saying all of that, I still managed to have a really successful professional chapter in my career. From the age of 31 up to 37, over them 6.5 years,
I managed
to win the Celtic, the Irish, and the EU European. So
the Celtic, Eric, that was in Dublin. You fought Davies, was it?
Yeah, Di Davies. Yeah.
What was that like? I suppose after turning professional in your own country, what was that like in Dublin?
It was mad because, like, you know, I always dreamed of, like, not always dreamed, I suppose, but when I turned professional, it was kind of like, I allowed myself to think about title fights again. I allowed myself to think about big nights. And, you know, the the goal for me turning pro was to win an Irish title. That was it. And I said, if I could get an Irish title, I would be, I'd be very happy with that. But it wasn't long afterwards that I realized that, you know, I might be setting the bar a bit low. I can push a bit further. So, yeah, so the Di Davies fight was, he was the Welsh champion, and I was only 4-0 as a fighter. I had four journeymen type fighters. So I had Di Davies then, who was not the most, you know, amazing boxer, but he was good. He was durable. He was decent, and he was clever enough and very experienced. And he was also the Welsh champion. So, like, you know, he came with something. He was the biggest profile fighter that I faced as a professional boxer, and a real step up from my previous four opponents. But I boxed so well, and it was a shutout points victory over 8 rounds. It was my first time to fight 8 rounds and go 8 rounds as well. So that was different in itself, having boxed 3 rounds my whole life. To go into an 8-round fight, you know, was a big change, big step up for me, but a good one.
And like you said, it was always a goal to win an Irish title. Was it in you won the national, was it in 2019 against Stephen McAfee, the guy was?
Yeah.
Stephen, that wasn't too long after, so wasn't?
No, that was it. I won that Celtic title. Then I defended it against a guy called Juan Gonzalez, the Pitbull, they call him. He was the Spanish champion. He was the Spanish national champion. So I beat him, defended my Celtic title against him. And I just felt like it was time to move up to the next level then. And an opportunity came in 2019 to fight Stephen McAfee for the vacant Irish title. The vacant Irish featherweight title. And thankfully, it was also a live broadcast live by TG Catter. So it was a great opportunity for me to announce myself back on the scene, basically. And I won that fight with a 4-round knockout. So it was brilliant. Good.
That's what I was going to say to you, Eric, TG Catter, you were saying there. They show a lot of Irish kind of fights as well. I know there's a guy from Kerry down here. He fights, and it's always on TG Garrett. Do you think they do a good job in, I suppose, highlighting and promoting boxing in Ireland?
They do a brilliant job. They really do, and they're not finished either. You know, they're showing more and more fights now, and not only boxing, but I mean in soccer and Gaelic football and camogie or hurling, all across the board. I think TG Catter do a terrific job in showing, you know, grassroots sports right up to national level and high levels in national sports. So I'm very grateful for their backing of me. And not only did they show that Irish title fight, but they broadcast my European title fight as well.
Boy.
And, that's something like I have, you know, I have that saved, and I have it, the whole package of that fight, and I'll be able to hold on to that like for the rest of my life. So delight you with that. Yeah.
Do you know when you were amateur moved up, were you fighting at the same weight class all along, or did you change?
When I was amateur, I boxed three different weights as an amateur: bantamweight, featherweight, and lightweight. Bantam is 54 kilos. Featherweight is 57, so it's a half a stone kind of jump. And then lightweight is another half a stone jump up to 60 kilos. So 54 kilos is about 8.5 stone, 57 kilos is 9 stone, and 60 kilos is 9.5 stone. So they were my three weight categories as an amateur, as a senior amateur. Then as a professional, I boxed at lightweight, I boxed at super featherweight and featherweight. But my Irish title fight was at featherweight, 9 stone, and my European title fight was at super featherweight, which is 9 stone 4. It was always hard for me making the weights, you know, because I'm quite big framed as well, you know. But
that's something that I was going to say, because I see boxing there and even MMA, like, all most, I suppose, fighting the weight cost, like the preparation is obviously hard enough, boxing and I suppose watching tape on your opponents and everything and mentally, but is the weight cut just as hard?
Sure, the weight cut is a fight in itself, like, you know, the fight outside of the fight. So, yeah, it was hard for me. It was always hard for me every single time I had to make the championship weight. Very, very difficult. Thank God those days are over.
And would it be the night before and the morning? Like, would it be, because you see clips there on Instagram and stuff, like people barely able to go onto the scale. Yeah. You think that they should accommodate more, not even weight classes, but just to keep the fighter, I suppose, not safer, but kind of just give them more of an easy cut?
No, there's plenty of weight categories there for people. If they, you know, if they can't make it in one of them, or if it's becoming too difficult in one weight category, go up to the next one. Now, in some of these weight categories, they're only 4 pounds in the difference, like, you know. So, like, move up, you know, move up. If you can't make it, move up. Like, there comes a time when the body just can't cut it anymore, you know. And it's in those moments that you need to move on to the next weight category, because if it's becoming detrimental and risky to your health, then, you know, it might be time to move on.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what's your thoughts on, I suppose, obviously we've Kelly Harrington here and Katie Taylor in Ireland, and they're doing a massive job putting Ireland on the map for women's boxing. What do you make of Katie Taylor, what she's done for women's boxing in general?
Oh, I think Katie's just a superstar, phenomenal. What she's done is just incredible, and to witness her rise and to see close hand the efforts she went to and the work that she put in, she's a true champion, and her legacy has been cemented long ago, long before she even took up professional boxing. But what she's done there is she's even brought women's professional boxing to a whole new level, and it's really great to know her and great to have shared so many personal experiences with her, and I sparred with her many times too, and I think we're very lucky to have to call her our own, you know, to have a real trailblazer in this country. And Kelly Harrington as well is equally as good as Katie Taylor, and she is another exceptional talent who again carved out her own career, you know, parallel to Katie's, because two of them kind of came up around the same time. And for Kelly to go on and follow in the footsteps of Katie and win that Olympic gold medal as well, it's just awesome to see that, to see her doing that. And she actually might be, I actually think Kelly Harrington is capable of retaining that Olympic gold medal in Paris next year. And if she does that, I tell you, that would be some achievement, be outstanding. So, but yeah, look, I mean, they're amazing. I think what they've done for women's boxing in general here and for women's sport, it's brilliant. They've given women so much opportunity and reason to believe and dream and make their dreams become a reality on the global stage. So fair play to them.
They are both equally as good as each other. What how are you during your career, Eric? Did you have any, I suppose you probably did, every athlete has their own injuries and stuff during the career. How did you have any serious injuries, and how did you deal with them mentally, or were you lucky?
Yeah, in saying that, I broke my left hand, which kind of cost me massively for the London Olympic Games. I spoke about that before. It was one of these things that happened.
2011, was it?
Yeah. It's one of these things that happened that just had a detrimental bearing on my life. And on my health and my boxing career, basically. But it was almost, I look back on it now as a learning experience, a moment of realization or transformation. That sequence of events around that time kind of propelled me in a direction of change, to changing my lifestyle, to changing my habits, to changing my the way I was living, changing my behaviors, all that kind of things, all that kind of stuff. And looking back
Heard you
now,
saying
even though
that
it's a,
on off the ball. You were saying on off the
yeah.
ball there. You said about your was it a train club trainer, Dominic O'Rourke? He was very kind of close to you that at that time, was he?
Yeah, Dom has always been close to me, but Dom's a good community man, you know. And we have these men all over the country, and boxing clubs have these people in every part of Ireland. And they're more than boxing coaches, they're life coaches. You know, they help people out and they make a great impact on society. And I think Ireland are very lucky, and the society in general in this country is very lucky to have boxing clubs because they do so much good in their community.
We see the whole thing going on over in England with Conor Benn and stuff and the whole, I suppose, anti-doping and in America they obviously have the USADA. Compared to America, in Ireland, how strict are they with, I suppose, testing fighters before or after fight?
It's funny because, like, I think they need to do a lot more. I think they do a lot. I think they need to do a lot more around professional boxing. It's a dangerous sport, very, very dangerous. The consequences of a beat down or loss in the ring can be much more than just a loss. In terms of like losing a fight, you know, people have lost their lives. People have been seriously brain damaged. People have been, you know, life threatening, life debilitating, consequences have happened as a result of a fight. So when you have fighters taking performance enhancing drugs to make themselves better, I think that's a very, very dangerous thing to be doing, to be dabbling with. And there needs to be stricter consequences for the people who fail those drug tests. I think there needs to be a life ban and no tolerance, like zero tolerance, and that's it. So for me personally, in my own career as a professional fighter, I had 18 fights over a 6.5 year period, and I only got tested once, and that was
Goalie.
after once, and that was after my last ever fight. One time.
One time.
One time I got drug tested, and that was after my last ever fight in my European title fight there last September.
That's mad. That's it just puts it into perspective, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
It's crazy. One time out of your whole
18 fights, 6.5 years. One time I got drug tested.
Do you think that we'll see the Conor Benn and Eubank Junior fight?
I think we probably will, but I don't think we should.
There was a lot of controversy with how on Talksport there, you know, Simon Jordan over in England, he himself and Eddie Hearn did a big debate how it was handled and stuff. You know, it was a lot of stuff going on.
Sadly, when you're living in, sadly, when you're involved in a sport that generates so much money, it becomes more about the money and less about the safety. That would be that would be my kind of like opinion on it, that it's a bit too lax, it's a bit too loose. It would need to be far stricter. When you're dealing with health, when you're dealing with like consequences of serious health concerns, there needs to be the utmost, strictest professionalism and adherence to these guidelines and rules. Like, it needs to be a zero tolerance principle. Like, you know, it's that's just my view. You know, it's, I'm very passionate about boxing, and I've seen fighters, watched fighters get seriously hurt in the ring and have serious like debilitating life health issues, you know. So the priority should always be the safety, and anybody that puts that into a jeopardy or tries to manipulate that in any way, it should be gone. And it doesn't matter how much money is involved, but that's just my view.
Before you finish up, I want to get your opinion on the whole thing now. It's going on with the last year or two, the influencer boxing scene, like Jake Paul and KSI and all that. Do you think that it's a good thing for boxing? Does it bring more eyes to the sport, or what do you think?
I have no real kind of qualms about it, like, but the sad thing for me is like that they seem to get a little bit more
coverage,
publicity, more, it's more like, in some cases, more money, more, it's more lucrative, more, just to get far more benefits than the real fighters who've been grafting away behind the scenes for years and years. But I don't begrudge them, you know. I think it, in some ways, it does bring a lot more eyes and more attention to the sport, but I'd be concerned as well. You know, when people take up boxing in their 20s and 30s and they haven't really had any lifelong experiences with the sport, you know, it can be quite dangerous, you know, taking blows on the head and stuff without the head guard and all. Like, you know, I think fighters who start off at a very young age condition themselves and build up that kind of resilience to punch resistance, and to build up their body. The bodies are able to almost, they know how to take a punch, they know how to ride punches, they know how to absorb punches. You know, if somebody's just kind of getting punches in the head in their late 20s or early 30s or whatever for the first time in their life, getting punches in the head is not a good thing in any time in your life. But like, I actually think it can be, it can be detrimental. So I'd be concerned about where it's going, the direction it's going and the speed it's going at, you know. I did see one particular fight there a while back. It was a female fight.
And yeah.
It was the one in the Tree Arena.
Tree Arena, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw it. There was two or three fights on that. There was a female fight and two male fights on that particular card, where I just saw fighters taking a lot of punishment. And I just said to myself, what's this for? Like, you know, if it's for to set a grudge or to kind of for bragging rights or like whatever about professional fighters who have a desire from a young age to become a champion and to become a champion of the world or champion of Europe or national champion or whatever. But like, when you've got these social media guys, YouTubers, whatever, just getting in because of bragging rights or to just kind of settle a grudge, I think there's far better ways of doing that than getting into the ring and you know, having a go off each other. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, there's so many unnecessary blows and stuff. It's a lot like, and like you said, if you start young, you can condition yourself to work up to getting blows. Like you said, it's not good at any age, but at least you get a kind of an idea of it. And the last question I have, I just want to ask you, in boxing or all sports really, but in boxing in particular, you announced yours November 22, but do you think it's hard for fighters to go out on their own terms sometimes without being forced out.
Yeah, I mean, like, boxing sucks you in, like, you know, because it's, again, as I said, it's a lucrative business. You know, the potential and the risk reward, sometimes the reward kind of has more sway than the risk, and people want to roll that dice one more time and try and capitalize on it and get the benefits and the rewards of maybe setting up their family or setting themselves up for life. And that's each to their own. People will roll the dice for their own purposes. But for me, it was always about feeling fulfilled, never really about the money or the fame or the attention. It was about me feeling content and happy after a lifetime's work in the sport with my career. And the first time around, when I retired from my amateur career, even though I had a pretty, many people would say I had a pretty outstanding amateur career, I still never felt at peace. I still never felt fulfilled. And that was the main reason I took up the professional journey of my career. And when I got to the end of that, winning that EU European title, I just had this sense of satisfaction and peace wash over me. And I was like, wow, that's what I was looking for. And I was able to be at peace with my career then, and I hung up the gloves then. And when I look back to my last fight, that was my greatest night in the ring, 30 years after walking into a boxing club. Cool. So sometimes people may wonder, and they may be doubting themselves, and they may be struggling in their life, but just, you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know how close you are to reaching your goals or making dreams come true. So that's, you know, if anything, I hope that would give people a little bit of hope in their own lives.
Absolutely. There's a lot more important things, family at home and stuff. So, it's a good message. Eric, come here. Thanks a million now for coming on today, and I appreciate your time, all right?
My pleasure, Ian, and keep up the good work. You're doing a great job.
Thanks a million.
He's boxing really well.
I knew I had the courage and the heart and the guts to go deep into the later rounds because, look, a lot of people know this, and I make no secret about it. I've been through a lot of adversity in my life, a lot of adversity. And there in the last rounds, I looked across at the ringside. I saw my wife. I saw my two kids, Jack and Troy. My wife is due as well in 2 weeks' time. And I, you know what? They saw me losing. They saw me getting knocked down. They saw me getting knocked out. But they never saw me quit. And I'll never, ever quit. I'll always fight and keep going to the very end. And I knew if I just kept going that the tide might turn. And it did. And I got a little bit of confidence in the later rounds. And that's all you need. Sometimes just that spark. I've never ever been hit as hard. But I just kept telling myself, suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion. Keep going. Keep punching.
In favor of Erling the Lily White Donovan!
Now, unfortunately, that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A huge thanks to Eric Donovan for coming on today for a chat, and I really appreciate him coming in tonight and talking about his own career and his own story. He's gone through a lot, through, I suppose, amateur and up to professional, and everything that goes with boxing, I suppose. The risks, your family, I suppose it can be a worrying sport at times for the family and wives and husbands and all of them all over the country. Boxing, it's a dangerous sport, and it's great to see people going in boxing, especially, I think, after a fight, there can be a lot of animosity leading up to the fight, and then straight after they can show respect. And I like that about boxing. It can be a very respectful sport when the two fighters do kind of reunite at the end. You like to see that. So a massive thanks to Eric for coming in tonight. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you'll be able to get me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or drop me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I hope you're all having a great week so far. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
You're listening to Standout with Enoconnell. Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.